Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
My fellow citizens, at this hour, American and coalition forces are in the early stages of military operations to disarm Iraq, to free its people, and to defend the world from grave danger.
20 years ago today, the United States invaded the oil-rich nation of Iraq, beginning a devastating war that destroyed Iraq, defied international law, helped destabilize much of the Middle East. Today, we spend the hour with two Iraqis, the journalist Forat Alani and the poet and novelist Sinan Antoun.
I think it's very important to remember the lies that were spread at the time to justify the invasion occupation, also to look at the legacy of what the invasion occupation has left Iraqis with and what kind of challenges they face as they live with the consequences of that illegal and destructive war, which to my mind amounts to terrorism.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Chinese President Xi Jinping is in Moscow for talks with President Vladimir Putin in his first visit to Russia since it invaded Ukraine. Beijing's show of support for Putin comes days after the International Criminal Court issued an arrest warrant for Putin for war crimes for deporting Ukrainian children to Russia. This is ICC President Pyotr Hofmansky.
The judges have reviewed the information and evidence submitted by the prosecutor and determined that there are credible allegations against these persons for the alleged crimes. The ICC is doing its part of work. As a court of law, the judges issued arrest warrants. Their execution depends on international cooperation.
Putin could be arrested if he travels to a member country of the International Criminal Court. Russia is not a member, nor are China, the United States, or India, which is hosting a G20 summit in New Delhi in December. In an apparent act of defiance, Putin visited the occupied Ukrainian city of Mariupol, a symbol of Ukrainian resistance. He also visited Crimea Saturday to mark the 9th anniversary of its annexation. In other news about the war, Russia, Ukraine, Turkey, and the United Nations agreed Friday to extend a deal allowing for shipments of Ukrainian grain via Black Sea ports for 120 days. Here in the United States, The Guardian's reporting the Biden administration's quietly resumed deportations to Russia. After suspending them last year following the invasion of Ukraine, many of those facing deportation could end up in prison or on the front line if sent back home. Over the weekend, protests took place across the United States calling for an end to U.S. involvement in the Ukraine war as the world marks the 20th anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. In the nation's capital, people rallied in front of the White House and marched in the streets of D.C. This is Claudia de la Cruz from the People's Forum.
We're here to let the world know that we are committed as a people to shut the war machine down. The planet and humanity depend on us. We got to fight. We got to continue to demand an end to NATO, an end to AFRICOM, an end to the Southern Command, and the levels of sanctions that the U.S. has all across the globe. We need to continue to make the connections of working class people in the United States to working class people all around the world. So we're here making those demands. We're also recommitting ourselves to lift up the anti-war movement once again.
The cost of war project estimates up to 306,000 Iraqi civilians have died from direct war-related violence, while hundreds of thousands more Iraqi civilians have died from indirect causes and millions have been displaced. Some estimates put the death toll in Iraq at over 2 million. In the lead-up to the illegal U.S. invasion in 2003, tens of millions of people took to the streets and thousands of anti-war protests across the globe. After headlines will will spend the hour looking at the U.S. invasion of Iraq with the Iraqi poet Sinan Antoun and French-Iraqi journalist and filmmaker Furat Alani. In Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, representatives from Israel and Palestine agreed to de-escalate tensions ahead of Ramadan, including an Israeli pledge to halt discussion of new settlement construction for 4 months. The talks were also attended by U.S., Egyptian and Jordanian officials. A similar pledge to curb violence was reached a month earlier, but did little to quell the mounting violence. Israeli forces and settlers have killed at least 85 Palestinians so far in 2023. As members of the extreme-right Israeli government have openly called for violence against Palestinians. In Gaza, protesters condemn Palestinian officials for taking part in the Egyptian meetings.
Attending these kinds of summits while there are massacres, while there is this fascist government in Israel, and during this critical time, is disregarding the pain and dignity of the Palestinian people.
Elsewhere in Egypt, the foreign ministers of Turkey and Egypt met in Cairo for their first official talks in a decade as the two countries moved to restore ties. The pair agreed to reestablish ambassadorships as soon as possible. Turkey and Egypt severed ties in 2013 after President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, who was then army chief, led the ouster of the Muslim Brotherhood's Mohamed Morsi, a Turkish ally. Tensions have also simmered over the conflict in Libya and over maritime borders in the eastern Mediterranean. UBS has agreed to buy smaller rival bank Credit Suisse for $3.2 billion in a bid to stem global financial turmoil following the collapse of two U.S. banks a week and a half ago. The deal was brokered by the Swiss government. The U.S. Federal Reserve, the European Central Bank, and others welcomed the news as they sought to reassure investors of the stability of global financial markets. Here in the United States, New York Community Bancorp reached a deal to take over the failed Signature Bank and assume all its deposits a week after it was seized by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. Signature's 40 branches will now operate as Flagstar Banks, which New York Community Bancorp acquired in December. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren called Sunday for an independent investigation into the collapse of Signature and Silicon Valley Bank. Warren also called for Biden to fire Fed Chair Jerome Powell, whom she blames for helping undo financial regulations and for continuing to raise interest rates despite forecasts it could cost 2 million people their jobs. French President Emmanuel Macron is facing a no-confidence vote in Parliament today after he pushed through a highly unpopular pension law using executive powers Friday, raising the retirement age from 62 to 64. Protests continue to rock France over the weekend with over 300 people arrested. Garbage continues to pile up on city streets as sanitation workers have been on strike for 2 weeks.
We continue. We don't give in. We resist despite the fatigue. Our determination is more than reinforced since the reform was pushed through. So I hope that everywhere in France, people will mobilize.
More protests and labor strikes are planned for the week. Press freedom groups are condemning the 12-year jail sentence of two Belarusian journalists after a closed-door trial. Lyudmila Chekina and Marina Zolotava work for an independent outlet, which was shut down by Belarusian forces in 2021 and labeled terrorists. This comes as a new report by the UN says human rights violations and repression carried out by Belarusian authorities against protesters and dissidents could amount to crimes against humanity. In Pakistan, police have raided and arrested dozens of supporters and aides of former Prime Minister Imran Khan following protests over Khan's attempted arrests. On Saturday, a court canceled arrest warrants for Khan after he appeared in person and scheduled a hearing on March 30th. Khan, who was removed from office by parliament last year, denies the corruption charges against him and is calling for snap elections. At least 16 people have died after a 6.8 magnitude earthquake struck off the southern coast of Ecuador Saturday, about 50 miles from Guayaquil. One of the deaths was reported in northern Peru. This comes as the region is still reeling from Cyclone Yaku, which killed at least 8 people.
My house was filled with water up to the waist. It reached us. We have lost everything. I lost everything. I don't even have anywhere to sleep, where to sit.
An estimated 60 people have died since the rainy season began in Peru. Elsewhere, intense flooding in Turkey's earthquake-stricken southern provinces has killed at least 16 people. The torrential rains have also damaged dozens of camps in northwestern Syria, which house many displaced survivors of the February 6 earthquakes. In Southeast Africa, the death toll from Tropical Cyclone Freddy, believed to be the longest ever in recorded history, has risen to 522 across Malawi, Mozambique, and Madagascar. Meanwhile, California is bracing for more heavy storms this week as the 12th atmospheric river this season hits the battered state. Thousands were ordered to evacuate Sunday in central California. In the San Joaquin Valley, farmers say damage to crops could impact national and international food supply.
Breaks everywhere, bridges, weirs, everything. I can't even begin to put a number on that. Crop losses. My personal opinion is between hundreds of millions to billion-plus dollars. And once those next storms hit, the flows will double, triple again. And it's just going to keep coming and coming.
Wyoming has become the first state to ban the use of abortion pills. The law goes into effect in July, making it a felony to prescribe, sell, and use abortion medication, the most popular method to terminate a pregnancy in the United States. People found in violation would face up to 6 months in prison and a fine. Meanwhile, the Republican governor, Mark Gordon, allowed another sweeping anti-abortion measure to become law without his signature. The so-called Life is a Human Right Act went into effect Sunday and prohibits abortion under most circumstances, punishable with up to 5 years in prison. The maternal mortality rate in the United States skyrocketed in 2021, with black women more than twice as likely to die than white women. That's according to new CDC data, which said the U.S. saw a 40% increase in maternal deaths in 2021 compared to the previous year, largely due to the compounding impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic. The U.S. maternal mortality rate is more than 10 times higher than the estimated rates in other wealthy countries. Donald Trump said he expects to be arrested Tuesday in connection with the Manhattan DA investigation into hush money payments made to adult film actor Stormy Daniels during the 2016 presidential campaign. In a post on his site, Truth Social, Trump called on his supporters to, quote, protest, take our nation back. Trump is expected to be indicted in the case, though the timing is unknown. A U.S. Air Force veteran from Texas was sentenced to 2 years in prison for his role in the January 6th Capitol insurrection. 55-year-old Larry Brock entered the Senate chambers in full combat gear and rifled through senators' desks. In Florida, the city of Miami Beach declared a state of emergency, imposing an overnight curfew Sunday after two fatal shootings this weekend and, quote, excessively large and unruly crowds, unquote, during spring break. Officials are meeting today to consider enforcing the measures again from Thursday to next Monday. And elsewhere in Florida, hundreds of farm workers and their supporters led a five-day, 50-mile march demanding humane working conditions and better protections. Workers are calling on food retailers to join the Fair Food Program, an initiative launched by the Coalition of Immokalee Workers in 2011 to improve conditions for farm workers and end modern-day slavery. The march began outside a labor camp in the agricultural community of Pakoki, where hundreds of farm workers were forced into brutal working and living conditions under threats of violence, deportation, and insurmountable debts. The owner of the labor camp was sentenced to nearly a decade in prison in 2022 for leading a federal racketeering and forced labor conspiracy across at least five states. The march ended in Palm Springs Saturday. This is Gerardo Reyes Chavez, a member of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, which organized the action.
We've come here to demand that Publix and Kroger supermarkets, which are directly connected to the situation of modern slavery in Pahokee, they buy watermelons from there, and Wendy's too, for them to join the Fair Food Program and put an end to the extreme labor abuses in this country.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. When we come back, 20 years ago today, the United States invaded the oil-rich nation of Iraq, beginning a devastating war that destroyed Iraq, defied international law, and helped destabilize much of the Middle East. Today, we spend the hour with two Iraqis, the journalist Forat Alani and the poet and novelist Sinan Antoun. Stay with us. By Nawaris here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Nermeen Sheikh. Hi, Nermeen.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, it was 20 years ago today when the U.S. invaded Iraq on the false pretext that Iraqi President Saddam Hussein was hiding weapons of mass destruction. The attack came despite worldwide protest and the lack of authorization from the United Nations Security Council. At around 5:30 a.m. local time in Baghdad, March 20th, 2003, air raid sirens were heard in Baghdad as the U.S. invasion began. Within the hour, President George W. Bush gave a nationally televised speech from the Oval Office announcing the war had begun.
My fellow citizens, at this hour, American and coalition forces are in the early stages of military operations to disarm Iraq, to free its people, and to defend the world from grave danger. On my orders, coalition forces have begun striking selected targets of military importance to undermine Saddam Hussein's ability to wage war. These are opening stages of what will be a broad and concerted campaign. I want Americans and all the world to know that coalition forces will make every effort to spare innocent civilians from harm. We come to Iraq with respect for its citizens, for their great civilization, and for the religious faiths they practice. We have no ambition in Iraq except to remove a threat and restore control of that country to its own people.
And this is how we began our broadcast on Democracy Now! 20 years ago today, March 20th, 2003. Welcome to Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Just about 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time last night, the U.S. military began an unprovoked attack on Iraq. Air raid sirens sounded throughout Baghdad just before the sun rose. Anti-aircraft fire filled the sky and explosions shook the city. Pentagon officials said over 30 Tomahawk cruise missiles were launched from warships. Two stealth bombers each dropped 2 one-ton bombs. It's not clear what has been hit or the extent of the casualties. The Iraqi news agency has just reported there are 14 injured and one dead. Iraq responded by firing 3 missiles into northern Kuwait, according to the U.S. military. That could not be independently confirmed. The attack was not the beginning of the expected massive, what the U.S. government calls shock and awe campaign. Instead, it was a targeted strike on Iraqi President Saddam Hussein. It is not yet clear whether the assassination attempt was successful. Hours before the attack, Senator Robert Byrd, the oldest voice in the U.S. Congress, condemned the Bush administration's war plans. The West Virginia Democrat said, "Today I weep for my country. No more is the image of America one of strong yet benevolent peacekeeper. Around the globe, our friends mistrust us. Our word is disputed. Our intentions are questioned." Byrd continued, "We flaunt our superpower status with arrogance.
arrogance. After war has ended, the United States will have to rebuild much more than the country of Iraq. We will have to rebuild America's image around the globe. Around the world, international leaders condemned the U.S. war. Top officials from France, Russia, China, India, Pakistan, Greece, Malaysia, Indonesia, and New Zealand were among the countries opposing the attack.
That was an excerpt from our coverage 20 years ago today of the start of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Last week, the Costs of War Project estimated over 550,000 people have been killed in Iraq and Syria since 2003. Some estimates put the death toll in Iraq at over 2 million. Today, the U.S. still has some 2,500 troops in Iraq. Well, we'll spend the broadcast today with two Iraqis looking back at how the unprovoked U.S. invasion devastated their country and helped destabilize much of the Middle East. Farah Talani is a French-Iraqi journalist who was based in Baghdad from 2003 to 2008. He travels to Iraq frequently. He's made several documentaries, including Flavors of Iraq. His first novel is just out in French, titled in English, I Remember Fallujah. His recent piece for The Washington Post is headlined, The Iraq War Helped Destroy What It Meant to Be an Iraqi. He's joining us from Paris, France. And here in New York, Sanan Antoun. He is an Iraqi poet, novelist, translator, scholar, born and raised in Baghdad, associate professor at New York University. His piece in The Guardian is just out. It's headlined, A Million Lives Later, I Cannot Forgive What American Terrorism Did to My Country, Iraq. He co-directed a documentary about post-2003 Iraq titled About Baghdad. A collection of his Arabic poetry will appear in English this summer under the title Postcards from the Underworld. His most recent novel is titled The Book of Collateral Damage. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Sanan Antoun, let's begin with you. Your reflections on this day. 20 years after the U.S. invaded Iraq. Talk about what happened to your country.
Thank you for having me, Amy. I mean, what happened in the last 20 years is catastrophic by any measure. If you look at the figures of the people who have been displaced because of this invasion, a total of 8 million Iraqis had to leave their homes. 1.2 million Iraqis are internally displaced in Iraq. There have been at least, well, figures vary, but 1 million deaths. We have 4 million orphans. We have an economy in shambles. We have a country that is ruled by militias and a country that frequently is in the top most corrupt countries in the world, with all kinds of economic and social problems, and one country where where climate change is manifesting its destructive effects in horrendous ways. And it's important, I think, since we are in the United States, for citizens to remember the amount of lies and how easily they were sold this war. And as I mentioned in my article, how the support for the war continued for several years. And until recently, a lot of people still think that somehow Iraq was involved with 9/11. And I think it says something, of course, about the corporate media, about how information is disseminated to citizens. Sorry, and except for Democracy Now! And a few other outlets, the media itself, of course, and then, you know, the scribes are all complicit in selling this war. And in continuing to give us these happy stories, just before coming into the studio out here, I was watching MSNBC, and one of its reporters was in Baghdad saying how great Baghdad is now because there is tourism, and going to one of Saddam Hussein's previous palaces, which was turned into an American university in Baghdad, which is a private university, and telling us, oh, it's a co-ed university, as if Iraq did not have co-ed universities for decades. I can go on, of course, but I'll stop here.
Farah Talani, if you could also respond and give us your reflections on this day as we mark 20 years since the U.S. invasion of Iraq.
Yes, thank you. And first of all, thank you for the invitation. And I'm really honored to share the show with Sinan Antoun, who is an inspiration to me. As he brilliantly said, the figures are enough to explain how this invasion, I refuse the term war, because a lot of people and observer are talking about the Iraq war. It was an Iraq invasion, illegal, and its consequences on many, many points are a disaster. But what is really important to me as a French of Iraqi descent is to remember that Iraq was a country. Iraq was a concept. We didn't know anything about the sectarian view that the U.S. brought in 2003. Of course, it was in history, but Iraqi used to describe themselves as Iraqis. There was a sense of identity, of citizenship. When I was a kid, I had the chance to go to Iraq. I was 9 the first time in 89. It was the only year of peace from the last 40 years. And the country I discovered was the opposite of all the clichés I had about the country. And at the same time, I was rational of the nature of the regime. But I still remember, and I refuse to forget, that Iraq was safe. Iraq had a daily life that was comparable sometimes to the life I had in France. Again, I would like to remind that Iraq was, of course, a dictatorship, and it was difficult or impossible to go against the regime. People were jailed, killed, or silenced. My father was an opponent to the regime, and he left Iraq in the 70s. So we know that, and we knew that at home, back in France. But the idea that 20 years later, we still are talking about how Iraq now is a better place, how Iraq is a democracy, when it's even almost impossible to have a sense of what the Iraqi citizenship is today. Iraqis are described with their sects or origin or ethnies. Iraqis today are described as Sunnis and Shia, Kurds and Arabs, Christians and Muslims, which is something I would oppose to what Iraq was. And to me, 20 years later, Iraq is part of a collective amnesia. And I think it's very important to highlight how Iraq was and maybe to talk about the future of Iraq.
Well, Fouad, if you could talk about, I mean, your piece, you've just elaborated on what exactly has happened to Iraqi identity. To what do you attribute the fact that Iraq came to be seen along purely sectarian lines, and that now, as you say, people continue to identify as Sunni, Shia, Kurd, etc.?
You know, when the American army and when the U.S. administration of George W. Bush invaded Iraq, they came with the idea that Iraqis, again, were not Iraqi. They were qualified by their sects. So from the day after the fall of the regime, we have seen on TV people that all Iraqis didn't really know, the Iraqi elite that came with the U.S. army, representing a concept of Iraq through sects and religion and confessions. And so we have to remind that everything was destroyed as a country. The Iraqi army was disbanded. The institution was dismantled. Iraq went from a very a dictatorship to a security and political vacuum that was filled with those ideas that Iraqi discovered, to be really clear. The concept of dividing the people, of talking about a majority and a minority, to me was really dangerous, because this security and political vacuum I was talking about was filled with people having a short-term vision about Iraq with their own interest, with probably revenge against the regime. And again, this idea, this very binary vision of Iraq, that the Iraqi people was divided in two, like people who supported Saddam and people who were against. Of course, it was much more complex than that. And a lot of mistakes came after the invasion of Iraq.